The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, Fanny Bryce stars as Baby Snooks from 1939, and Lou Merrill stars in an episode of Fireside Tales. We'll also hear a story from One Man's Family from 1949. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Lou Merrill stars in an episode of Fireside Tales, and we'll hear a story from One Man's Family from 1949. Right now, Fanny Bryce stars as Baby Snooks from 1939 as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Well, there's trouble in the house again. Snooks ransacked all the closets, found the Christmas presents, and opened them up. Mother was good and mad, and she reported the incident to Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford. As the scene opens, Daddy is entering Snooks' bedroom to have a talk with her. Listen.
Snooks. Snooks, where are you?
I'm only the bed.
Oh. Are you going to come out?
No.
Well, look out. I'm coming under there.
Is he after you too, Daddy?
Nobody's after me. What are you doing under that bed?
I'm hiding from that woman.
What woman?
Your wife. I don't like her.
Oh, come on out.
All right, Daddy.
Now, that's better. Now, what happened?
Mommy didn't give me no supper, and she spanked me.
Oh, I told her never to spank you on an empty stomach.
She didn't spank me on the stomach, Daddy.
Well, whatever happened, I guess you deserved it.
I didn't do nothing.
You did plenty. Mother told me you've been a naughty girl all day. Snooks, what's the matter with you? With Christmas so close, you'd think a little girl would go out of her way to be very good.
You'd think so, wouldn't you, Daddy?
Now, don't be smart. I certainly wouldn't want to get caught opening the presents before Christmas.
I didn't want to get caught either.
Now, stop that. How is it Mother found you in that closet with the presents?
She walked awful quiet, Daddy.
The very idea. Ripping open all the packages. People go out of their way to be nice to you, get you lovely presents, and you couldn't wait a couple of days. Ah, that's the lowest trick in the world.
Is it, Daddy?
It certainly is. Didn't see anything for me there, did you?
Uh-huh. Mommy bought you a bathrobe.
Oh. One of those crummy ones like last year?
Same thing.
Oh, well.
You want to see it, Daddy?
No, I don't want to see it. You didn't happen to see what I got for Mother, did you?
Uh-huh.
That's really a nightgown, isn't it?
Uh-huh. It's a crummy one like last year.
Now, Snooks, just because I said it, you don't have to say it.
Mommy said it, too.
Oh, she did. This is going to be a fine Christmas. And on top of everything, Uncle Louie's coming to stay with us.
He won't like it either.
What do you mean?
I seen the present you brought him.
I never mind that present. What's the matter with it anyway? It's a very expensive tie. Oh, what's he giving me? A grand piano?
No, he said
you... Now, don't tell me. That's the very thing I'm trying to explain to you. I've got enough patience to wait until Christmas morning to open my presents. I don't go snooping around closets and... What did he send me, sir?
I ain't gonna tell
you. All right, you don't have to. I'm not curious.
Not much.
Not at all.
Oh, no.
You don't have to tell me if you don't want to.
All right.
Now, what is it? Such a big secret?
Well, I won't tell you what it is. but,
Yes?
It's made of wood, and it's brown, and you smoke it.
Another pipe. Two-bit Louie. Ah, cheapskate. And to think I tossed out 39 cents on that tie. I'll bet the pipe's no good.
It's no good, Daddy.
Well, how do you know?
I smoked it.
I've got a good mind to tell Santa not to bring you anything.
I don't care.
Oh, you don't?
No, I seen what he brought me and I don't like it. I want a pair of ice skates.
Well, that's a horse of another color.
I want a colored horse, too.
I'm afraid you're asking for a little too much, Snooks.
Then just tell him to bring me the ice skates.
No, no ice skates.
Oh, please, Daddy.
I think you're too young for ice skates.
Why?
Well, oh, Christmas is so close, and I don't want to argue. But look, I'll buy you the skates.
Honest, Daddy?
Yes, honest.
You're the bestest daddy in the whole world.
These are the tales of America. These are the voices of the land, belonging to Americans who believed in doing things. Their achievements became the legend of the land, to sing about and tell about and pass on down to other generations. The people we tell about helped make us what we are today, gave us the drive and the push. So here's to the American legend, the Fireside Tales.
And now we present Old Stormalong, Deepwater Sailor Man.
Say, do you remember Old Stormalong, the legendary Deepwater Sailor Man?
Certainly I remember Old Stormalong. Take a lot of doing to forget the greatest sailorman ever. I was with him on the Lady of the Sea, the first ship he ever did sail. I was standing right there when the skipper says to him...
And who be this sea giant?
Alfred Fulltop Stormalong, Captain.
ABS. Able-bodied sailor. How tall be you?
Just 4 fathoms from the deck to the bridge of my nose.
By your size and strength, they should measure the talents of all other seamen.
Stormalong was not only a sailorman for all waters, but he was a whaler, too. Now, mind the time the Lady of the Sea was anchored in the middle of the North Atlantic. The lookout sights a school off to the eastern, and Stormy, the bosun now, gives the order.
Hoist the mudhole! By the north end, an octopus is wrapped all around that mudhole, holding the anchor with half of his tentacles and with the other half hanging onto the seaweed at the bottom.
The mate yelled,
"Fast, Kittyman!"
and went back to tell the skipper. But when the old man come forward, he was just in time to see Stormy taking a deep breath, take his sheath knife in his teeth, and hurl himself overboard. Was sure our bosun had been tore apart by the octopus. It was a quarter of an hour. Stormy's wind couldn't have held out much longer when suddenly there was a calm and Stormy's head come to the surface.
Throw him a line!
But Stormy didn't wait. He'd grabbed the anchor chain and come hand over hand to the deck.
All right! All hands lean on it and bring it home!
All hands! What'd you do with the octopus?
Just tied his arm in knots. Anchor knots. It'll take him a month of Sundays to untie
him. Stormalong was as loyal to his ship as any sailorman until he saw a bigger one. And the Lady of the Sea was the biggest ship sailing the Atlantic. At least we thought she was. But just before we got to Barnegat, we came across what first appeared to be a mirage. Stormy was at the other rail, gazing at the biggest ship ever in goggle-eyed admiration.
Must take a million ordinary sailors to man her. Yes, sir. 1 million at least. Well, I guess I'll be leaving this packet.
And a minute later, Stormy was overboard, swimming the Atlantic, swimming to the big ship. And the Lady of the Sea was without a bosun. After we discharged our cargo in Boston, I signed on the Courser. It was none other than the big ship we'd seen a few weeks before. The one Stormy had gone over the side for. The first thing that caught my eye as my feet hit the deck was a stable full of horses. I said, horse boat, huh? And then...
horse boat, nothing.
Storm along. Well, figured is how I'd see you here.
This is the ship for me, built for a man who's 4 fathoms tall from deck to bridge.
Sure a big ship.
Big? Ha! That's what the horses are for. All the officers and men on watch are mounted on horses so they can cover their territory. Man alive, her rigging's so big, no living man can take her in at a single glance. Her masts go into the clouds, and the top sections are on hinges, so they can be bent over to let the sun and moon pass. Yes, sir, matey, she's a big ship.
Stormy was right. A big ship and a fine ship. There never was a storm great enough to cause her any real discomfort. But there was one thing caused us a bit of worry. That morning, the bosun put his mouth to his megaphone and shouted,
"Rise and shine for the Blackfall Line!"
And there was Stormalong at the wheel, holding her true to what he thought was her course. The captain told us we were somewhere in the North Sea and headed south. That meant trouble. The Courser could never get through the English Channel.
We could try turning her around.
Aye, but if we do, we're bound to knock off a bit of Scotland and Norway.
And we'll make mud pies out of the Shetland Islands.
You're both right. Even if we miss Scotland, the tidal wave would cause a killer anyway. Seems as hard as nothing we can do, except let Stormy try and get us through the Channel.
Just as we got to the point between Calais and the cliffs of Dover, the skipper looked back at Stormy and saw that the man at the wheel was calm and steady. The skipper yelled to Stormy through his megaphone.
We'll see him make it! Aye, Captain, I think so. Better send all hands over and soap the sides. Put an extra heavy coat on the starboard.
And 550 men were sent over to cover every inch of her hull with the finest soap money could buy. Soon the Courser was a gleaming, slippery white from stem to stern. And all hands was ready as the Courser entered the channel. Our eyes was all on Stormy. It was up to him now. He was at the wheel and the only man who could get us through. The ship lurched, and then she began to ease through just as sweet as honey. And it was all due to the soap that we got through it all. It was such a tight fit, though, that every bit of soap was scraped off the starboard side. Ever since then, those cliffs have been pure white. And they call them the White Cliffs of Dover. The Courser kept right on going. But after a few hours, we got into shallow water. And we had to jettison all of our ballast. We threw so much overboard that you can still see the piles of dirt. The English call them the Channel Islands.
Mr. Stormalong!
Aye, Captain!
Westward watch! Islands!
They had better watch us, Captain!
It was a September gale that gave the courser her most terrifying moments. She was down among the Caribbees, and the storm whipped her about pretty badly. The skipper warned as much afraid of losing his ship as he was of hitting one of the islands and knocking it and the inhabitants into kingdom come. Then the courser headed west by south like a bronco with the bit in his teeth. Right down the gulf she went until she come to Panama.
Land ahead!
Darien it is, Captain!
We're going to hit her, Mr. Swabalong!
Aye, sir!
It should have been a great tragedy. It should have been the greatest disaster the world had ever known. But by my whale's tooth, it was none of those. The courser slid across the shores of Darien, tore through the whole isthmus, and found herself out in the Pacific Ocean, drifting in a calm. The only eyewitnesses of the destruction outside the crew was some army people who'd been sent down by the United States to make surveys for a canal. And like one of them said...
And right in front of our very eyes, this ship, bigger than the storm itself, came roaring out of the Caribbean, through the isthmus, and dug the canal for us.
And another one?
It was quite interesting. The army, of course, anticipated this event. And now that the ditch is dug, we will finish the Panama Canal in quick order.
Of course, the truth of the matter is that old Stormalong and the courser dug that ditch and practically built the Panama Canal single-handed. But old Stormy wasn't one to brag. He let the army take the credit. Well, skippers come and skippers went, but Stormy stuck to the courser to the end. And what an end it was. We was calmed in the South Atlantic. Not a breeze for days and supplies running low. Stormy, the captain, and me was talking about what we do.
Men are getting hungry. Weighed up every fish in the ocean and trapped every bird in the sky. Nothing left to do but reach land somehow.
I wonder if there's any wind way up.
Wouldn't know. Both topsails were destroyed in the last storm.
I could go up and fix them.
But Stormy, it's a long climb. The young men who've reached the top have come down with long gray beards.
If anybody can do it, Stormy can.
Aye, Captain.
All right, Stormy, the topsail is yours.
Stormy begun immediately. He took 1,000 yards of line, twirled around one finger, a kit of tools strapped to his back, and a captured pilot whale under his belt to feed him while he was aloft. Then he braced himself on the top deck, crouched on his knees, drew a deep breath, and shot himself upwards through a low cloud, past the hinges that bent so the sun and moon could pass, and finally become just a pinpoint that fell on one of them top riggings. Some of the crew said they saw him take another leap before he was completely out of sight, but there's none who'll swear to it. And Stormy himself, he never come back to prove their story. By nightfall, the courser was moving again. We knew Stormy must have fixed the topsail, because there was still a calm at sea level. And what really happened to Stormy? Well, nobody knows for sure. But being as close as I was to him, I could take a guess. Only a few minutes before the courser started moving again, the moon come up out of the ocean. It was cloudy overhead, so we soon lost sight of it. But by careful calculation, I figure it happened like this.
There you are, topsail! All fixed! And now, you winds, blow! Blow the courser home! Blow, you winds!
And just as the ship started to move, Stormy, who was over the clouds, saw what we couldn't see. The moon was heading straight for our main rigging.
The moon? It's going to hit the rigging. And the captain won't bend her at the hinges. He can't see the moon. Our rigging will be ruined. We'll never get home unless I help steer her clear.
And with that thought, Stormy again braced himself. Only on the very top rigging this time. And as the moon was about to hit it, he reached out, grabbed two craters on the moon, and shoved with all his might. He shoved and pushed, and then took one final mighty breath, and gave the mightiest shove that was in him. It worked. The moon just missed our top rigging, and the courser was headed home. But Stormy, well, I figure that when he grabbed hold of the moon, his giant hands got stuck in one of those craters. He couldn't get them out fast enough. And by the time he did, the courser was 100 miles away, and Stormy was left by himself, sitting on the moon. Yes, sir. None of us old-timers ever forgets old Stormalong. Every time the moon is full, we sort of look up and wink at it. Because we know, sure as Iron Men used to sail wooden ships, that old Stormalong is the man in the moon who keeps looking down at this earth.
You've been listening to Old Stormalong, Deepwater Sailor Man, another American legend written by Robert M. Young, produced and directed by James W. Talbot. Lou Merrill was Stormalong, and Joe Duval was the old skipper. Others in the cast were Rye Billsbury, Tom McKee, Clayton Post, and John Stevenson. Original music was composed by John Hicks, with the orchestra under the direction of Michel Perrier. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Dentists know what cleans teeth best. And over 4,000 dentists say Colgate tooth powder with a 2-minute routine gets teeth sparkling and super clean. So to remove dull film and get your teeth shining clean, just brush teeth 2 minutes morning and night with Colgate tooth powder.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio and the story of Old Stormalong on Fireside Tales, starring Joe Duvall and Lou Merrill. We also heard Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks, first broadcast on radio on December 21st, 1939. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Here's an episode of One Man's Family from 1949 as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
This is One Man's Family. One Man's Family is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Today, transcribed, we present Chapter 3, Book 71, entitled Roberta Evans Begins to Sense a Rival. Well, it's vacation time at the Sky Ranch, and most of the family is present, including a weekend guest, Roberta Evans. However, Pinky's out in the world making his fortune in a lumber camp up north. Joan's in town with Paul, working at the airfield. And last night, Father and Mother Barbara returned to Seacliff because, as Henry says,
There are times when even the most ardent family man can love his grandchildren more dearly at a distance. Mother and Father Barber are at the breakfast table.
More coffee, Henry? Piece of toast?
No, thank you. Nothing more.
I believe you got a little sunburned at the Sky Ranch.
Yeah, sat around that swimming pool too long without my hat yesterday.
Well, maybe next time you'll listen to me.
Yeah. Next time we go up, I'll spend all my time down in my hammock. Too much noise and confusion around that swimming pool anyway.
Wonderful place for children.
Yes. I can take just so much of it, and then I want to get back here in the quiet of our own home.
Oh. By next weekend, you'll be able to wait to get down there again.
Yeah. You'd better call up to Paul and Joan to come down here to breakfast. They'll be late getting out to the airport.
Oh, they'll be along. Paul knows what time he has to get Joan out there much better than you.
Yeah, very well, my dear.
Henry, are you grumpy this morning?
I wasn't aware of it.
Well, you are, like an old bear. Are you still irritated because Joan went out last night? Is that it?
That's Paul's responsibility, not mine.
Exactly what I've been trying to tell you.
Just the same, I think the whole arrangement is wrong. Joan belongs with her parents. Paul is making a big mistake in assuming the responsibility of a girl of Joan's age.
Well, what's so wrong with it?
Suppose something happens. Then what?
And what do you think is going to happen, Henry?
I don't know. But apparently she's been out with this boy from the airport two or three times now.
Well?
Huh?
What of it? Paul knows him. He must think it's all right. He wouldn't permit it. Personally, I think this whole thing is wonderful for Joan.
Oh, you do?
I certainly do. She's ecstatically happy with her job, and I've never seen her such fine spirit. Why don't you appreciate this new Joan without moodiness or sullenness?
Yes, sir.
Honestly, Henry, when you get yourself into a tizzy...
Good morning, folks.
Oh, good morning, Joan.
Good morning, Grandfather.
Good morning.
Paul will be right down. Sit there, Joan. There's orange juice all poured for you.
Oh, thanks. Gee, it's sure swell of you to fix breakfast for us, Grandmother. I guess you'll be glad when Mrs. Kettleman's back from her vacation.
Paul tells me you've been getting his breakfast every morning.
Oh, I like doing it. I never tried cooking much before. Of course, there isn't much to getting a breakfast. We eat out the rest of the time when you're gone.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning.
Oh, Paul.
How goes it, Mom? If you'll give me a kiss, the day will have a perfect start.
What a nice thought.
Who's the gentleman buried in the newspaper here?
Henry.
Huh?
Paul's speaking to you. Can't you say good morning?
I said good morning.
Well, nobody heard it.
I heard a little grunt. You ought to know after all these years, Mom, that a grunt from Dad can mean almost anything from good morning to what have you.
Joan, there's some hot cereal on the stove. Or would you rather have some eggs?
Oh, no, the cereal will be fine. Paul?
Perfect, perfect.
Oh, sit still, Grandmother. I'll get it.
Thank you, dear. Do you want to take the coffee pot and warm it up a little?
Oh, sure. I'll just be a sec.
I can't get over the improvement in Joan's attitude, Paul. You've been a tonic for her.
She's coming along, isn't she?
Why, she's not the same girl.
Oh, yes, Mom. Same girl who's developing a new outfit.
Paul, you say you know this boy, eh?
What's that?
This boy that Joan went out with last night.
Oh, Ken Arthur? Yeah, he's a lad who works down at the airport.
Do you know anything about him?
Not a great deal, no.
What does he do down there?
He's a grease monkey.
Huh? What's that, Paul?
Sure, that's his job. He services planes. They call themselves grease monkeys.
And you're permitting Joan to go out with a monkey?
Well, grease monkey, Dad. Why not? He's a very nice lad. He wants to be a flyer.
Well, it's your own affair, of course. You got yourself into this situation. But...
Yeah? But what?
Well, don't you think that we've had enough trouble the past few weeks without inviting more of it?
What makes you think there's going to be trouble?
Exactly, Henry.
Don't say I didn't warn you. Grease monkey.
Henry.
Hot cereal coming up.
Ah, yes. Saved from starvation at the last moment by a lovely young maiden.
You look pretty healthy for a starving man.
Well, where's the coffee, gal? Come, my coffee.
Oh, yes, master, but I only have two hands.
Well, that's no excuse.
I put some bread in the toaster while I was out there. I'll get it and bring in the coffee.
Thank you, honey.
Welcome.
You see, Henry, she's a different girl.
Does this boy live with his family, Paul?
Uh-oh, here we go again.
Huh?
I think so, Dad. I told you I didn't know too much about him. But I do know this. I have complete confidence in Joan. Furthermore, I feel that I'm a fair judge of character and of human nature, and I'll stake anything that this Ken is an all right boy. So I wish you'd please stop worrying. Here comes the coffee.
Good and hot, too.
Sit down, Joan, child, and eat your cereal before it gets cold.
Okay.
The cliffs really come to life up the Sky Ranch, huh, Mom?
Oh, yes. Happy and lighthearted. More like the old Clifford every day.
Yeah, wonderful.
He said to give you and Joan his love when he left yesterday.
Well, Joan, I'll probably be able to go up there next weekend. How about it, Joan?
Oh, swell. Is Roberta Evans still up there? Oh, yes. I think she's coming back home today or tomorrow.
Huh, that'll be tough on Clay.
Yeah, she has fine girl. She's got lots of sense.
Oh, are you listening, Henry? Why don't you put that paper down?
Very well, Fanny. Very well.
Good old Clip. Maybe he's going to find happiness after all.
Well, I just hope he doesn't overdo. He's so full of goodwill and exuberance, there's just no holding him down.
Oh, Cliff, wait a minute.
Oh, good morning, Hazel. Ever see anything like this morning? Look at that sparkle on the hills.
Well, what's your hurry? Come on, have a swim.
Hey, I haven't had breakfast yet. My stomach's caved in.
What?
I'm so hungry, my knees are knocking together. Hi there, Hank, my boy.
Oh, hi, Uncle Cliff. The mailman's been here. I just got a swell letter from Pinky. You want to hear it?
Well, not right now. Do you mind? There's just one thing I want to hear. The gentle splash of hot black coffee in a cup.
Oh, boy. I'll go read it to Mom and Dad.
Hi, Cliff. Hiya, Jackson, old son, old son, old son.
You and Nicky and Claude get back from your horseback ride?
I did. Nicky and Claude rode on down to the Newman place.
Did, huh? Want some coffee?
Oh, do I want some coffee. And what is this on the sideboard? Biscuits. Chafing dish?
And codfish. You like it?
Oh, no. Don't tell me. You don't mean to say everything's going to be perfect. Cream codfish on hot biscuit.
Oh, fresh raspberry jam for the biscuit.
Oh, it's too much. It's too beautiful. Doggone, am I starved. And look at that lovely creature coming down the stairs. Hi, Roberta.
Good morning, Clifford.
What is that? The latest in bathing suits? Wow.
How do you like the robe?
Who cares about the robe with a swimsuit like that? Hey, come on, have some coffee with me.
Hazel's waiting for me. I promised to go swimming.
How long do you think you swim?
About an hour. Why?
Well, come back here then. I'll still be eating.
Oh, you look wonderful, Cliff.
Everybody looks wonderful. It's the weather.
I'll see you later.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
What the dickens has got into you this morning?
I really couldn't tell you. There I was, cantering along on the Palomino, and...
Aren't those biscuits wonderful?
Oh, hot baking powder, biscuit, jam, butter. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, there I was, cantering along on that new Palomino. Great name for him, too. Big stuff. Swell name for a horse.
You were cantering along, and what?
I was cantering along the wood trail, and I never saw a horse in my life with an easier gait. That's a fact. I rode a Tennessee walking horse one time, like the proverbial rocker, but I'll take big stuff any day. Hey, pour me some coffee, will you?
Well, what happened?
I got to thinking. Here I was in one of the prettiest places in the world, on a good horse, feeling like a million, and all of a sudden I thought, I've got a son.
Oh, I see. Slide the butter over here, will you?
Mm-hmm. You don't see it all. Nobody could understand it. Suppose you woke up in the morning with 11 years gone out of your life, and those triplets of yours came walking in, suddenly 11 years older and beautiful. After the first shock was over, well, wouldn't it give you a lift?
Oh, boy. 11 years of bills, all paid.
No, seriously.
I know what you mean, Cliff.
I had a talk with Andy, that Skippy, only now he's agreed that Andrew's a good name. He's calling me Dad now, too. Boy, does that send goose pimples up my arm? Dad. Well, anyhow, I got to thinking this morning. I can pal around with Andy all summer, riding, hiking, reading books together, and help him see things clearly so he won't make the same brutal mistakes I did. Oh, what a chance. Slide the butter back. Oh, I can't explain it, but anyhow, I got a tremendous lift. Morning, Daniel. Had your breakfast?
Morning, Clifford. How do you feel?
Like $40 million, that's all.
You're 45, wouldn't you say?
Or 50. Feels swell. Had your breakfast?
Hours ago. I'm looking for Hazel. Scuttlebutt has it. There's a letter from Pinky.
Yeah, so here.
Hazel's out by the pool.
That's right. I just saw her.
Give me one more biscuit.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, still good eating. See you later.
You're okay. You know, Jack, when I gave Skippy that motor scooter, he still wasn't dead sure he liked me, you know, the way I pushed him off on other people all those years. It's no wonder. But anyhow, I was out on the steps there, and he'd go chugging past, and every now and then he'd look at me out of the corner of his eye.
Kind
of
shy.
Yeah. And he must have ridden that scooter 9 hours that day. And the more he rode it, the better he liked it. And the more he thought of me. Then in the evening, he called me Dad for the first time. Oh, he looked so much like Anne. Even his voice is a little like hers. The way he says things, his enunciation. What am I talking like this for? You don't know what I'm trying to say. Probably doesn't make any sense.
You know something?
What?
I think I'll get myself a good hard bash on the head.
What for?
There are a few years I'd like to forget. Yes, sir, but forever.
For what years?
That 4-year stint in the Army. I used to be lighthearted, too, remember? Gay and free and lyric, just the way you are. Must have been the army that got me down.
You don't think a grand total of six daughters might have sloped your shoulders a little? Oh, hey. Hey, there's Andy. Bench riding with his motor scooter. He gets 50 miles to the gallon. I bet he used 3 gallons those last 2 days. Oh, everybody's going to be mighty proud of him someday. If you think I sound sentimental, I'll poke you in the eye. Oh, Hank, now what?
Oh, this really is a swell letter. You want to hear it now?
Dan was looking for it. Did you read it to him?
Well, not yet, but I read it to Ben and Betty and Miss Evans, and I might as well read it to you now that I'm here.
Now, read it to Jack. I want to catch the demon driver of that motor scooter on his next time around. Hey, Jack.
Yeah, Cliff?
Don't let anybody put that chafing dish away. I may want some more.
Okay.
Hey, Andy.
Morning.
What are you going to do today, son?
I don't know.
Oh, so what's the matter?
Nothing.
Oh, hey, Skip, what's wrong?
Not a thing. I guess I'll use my wrench and tighten up things now I've stopped anyhow.
Mm-hmm. Mind if I sit down here and watch you?
No, sir.
Now, look, Andy, wait a minute. Something's eating you, young fella. Hmm? You want me to call you Skippy instead, Andy? Hey, come on now. You got stuff on your mind. I want to hear it. You sore at me? Hmm? Huh, fella?
I'm not sore, Dan.
Well, what's the matter then?
Are you going to get married?
What?
I heard Ben and Hank talking. They think you're going to get married again.
Oh, they do, huh? And to whom?
That girl.
Roberta Evans, you mean?
Dad, are you gonna?
Well, Skip, that's a pretty tough thing for a man to answer. When you get a little older, you'll realize that there's one thing you can never be dead sure of. And a good many men have said that they'd never get married, and 2 weeks later, they're just coming home their honeymoon.
Oh. Then I guess you are.
Oh, no, Skip. I just mean no man can make a promise about marriage. I haven't any intention of getting married. Will that do?
I wouldn't want you to promise anyhow.
Well, why not?
Promise is no good.
Oh? You mean mine isn't? Andy, Skip.
It didn't used to be.
What sort of promises did I break? Come on now, tell me.
Oh. You'd say to wait in my room, and you'd come up and read me a story. And I'd wait, and you wouldn't come.
Just a stinker, huh?
Or you'd promise a picnic, but we'd never have it. Or a movie, but we'd never go. Just stuff like that. But I don't think you'd break a promise now, if you made one.
You think I've improved, huh?
Oh, sure. You've improved a lot, Dad.
What makes you think so? Because I gave you the scooter?
No. In lots of ways. You stop and talk to me. Like this. Just us talking. That's an improvement.
Oh. Skipper, you don't want me to get married again. Is that it?
Oh, it isn't any of my business.
Oh, yes, it is.
Pardon me. Hey, Hank!
What?
So Dan was looking for you.
I know it. Where is he?
He's up by the pool.
Okay, I'll go see him.
Now, look here, Skip. Roberta Evans is a mighty nice girl. I like her. But you know, when I woke up in the hospital, I was under the impression that she was Paul's girl, not mine. I can't remember yet where I met her. You understand? I'm just getting acquainted with her. We're just friends, Skip. Ben and Hank were romancing a little, maybe.
Honest?
Why, sure. I give you my word, as of this moment, I have no plans for getting married. And I'm flattered that it bothers you.
Oh, boy. Say, Dad.
Yeah?
How'd you like to ride on the scooter with me?
Well, is there room?
Sure. It's a big seat. Try it. See?
Well, sure enough. Oh, have we finished our conversation about Roberta?
Let's don't ever mention her again. Hang on tight now. Where'd you want to go?
Well, let's go up past the pool.
Okay, Dad. Here we go.
I'll pretend it's an airplane.
Well, not while I'm armed. It's far enough to fall when it's still a scooter. Oh, hey, there's Roberta. She isn't through swimming already.
I'm going to go right past her. Fast.
Hey, Roberta, where are you going?
Dan, hi, Aunt Hazel.
Where you going? Off in the wild blue yonder. Watch out for rocks, for I got a tender head, you know.
It's safe. I'll show you how fast she can go.
Look at the two scooter kids. How young can you get?
I haven't seen Cliff act this way in years. Have you, Dan?
Never. The years he's forgotten have left his face, too. He feels 28, acts 28. That makes him 28. Makes me think of a line I read one time. The way you think is the way you act, and the way you act is what happens.
Oh, that's wonderful. Who wrote that?
A psychologist named Donald McLean. Good, isn't it?
The way you think is the way you act. The way you act is what happens.
Yes, that's excellent. Maybe I'll make myself think I'm a girl of, well, what?
30?
You, 30. I was going to say 20.
Oh, don't do that. You'd be too young for me. Hey, Hank! Where have you been?
Oh, I've been reading Pinky's letter to different people.
Well, let's see it. I'm the one who's been worrying about the boy. Hand it over.
No, let me read it. I like reading it.
Pinky says nice things about Hank. He wants to be sure people skip nothing.
Okay, Hank, go ahead.
Dear Hank and everybody, I've had a little sore throat, but don't worry about me. I'm going to stay all summer. Mr. Justin wouldn't get me in the Forest Service, but he got me a fine job where I'm learning a lot about cooking.
What?
Yeah, cooking. That's what he says. It's great up here in this lumber camp, and you never saw a man that could eat so many potatoes. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and start peeling potatoes, and I'm still pretty busy about 8 hours later. Writing's kind of faint here. I got a title already. It's second assistant cook. I cut my hand, but don't worry about it because there's only a little affection.
Just a little, huh?
Yeah, and that won't keep me from staying here all summer. I get 17 a week, and I sure miss you, Hank, and I'm sorry I used to get sore at you because you're a good guy and our fights weren't my fault.
Well, can you read that without blushing?
I don't interrupt. The next part's fascinating.
Well, here, you read, Dan. My tonsils are getting tired.
Fine, let's see. The air is fine and cold here, especially at night, which is good for me, and you certainly have to be a man among men to stick it out. By the end of the summer, I'll sure be mature, and I wish you were here, Hank. This is a fine free experience to get out in the world and find out how they fell trees and see how much the ordinary lumberjack can eat. You wouldn't believe it unless you saw it. They eat pounds of stuff every meal, especially potatoes. It's a healthy life. I stubbed my toe pretty bad in the dark the other night, but that isn't going to keep me from staying all summer, even though I'm still limping pretty badly. Very slight infection in the toe. Well, Hank, I never realized how important a twin brother is until I got way up here alone in this beautiful wild country with nobody that talks my language. See you in September. Love to everybody, Pinky.
Quite a letter, isn't it, Dan?
Yes, isn't it?
Gee, it sure sounds great. Wild, free country and felling trees and good cold nights. Golly, I think I'll go up there and join them.
What?
Well, that would be a good experience for a medical student, all those accidents. Lumberjacks probably get hurt a lot. I could practice first aid.
Hank, you mean to say you don't understand that letter?
Well, sure I understand it.
Hank, Pinky isn't going to stay there.
Well, he says he is. He says right here.
Here, let me show you.
Oh, Mom, what are you laughing about?
Darling, you didn't read between the lines, and that's a good lesson. Never bother to read anything unless you read between the lines.
Now, listen to this, Hank. Not only with your ears, but with your mind. I've had a little sore throat. Now, that could develop into something that'd bring him home, couldn't it?
Huh?
Gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning after freezing all night. You ever peel a ton of potatoes, Hank?
Not a ton.
Well, your twin brother's peeled a ton of potatoes. He doesn't like it. Second assistant cook. You know what that means?
What?
Well, he gets all the jobs nobody else wants to do. Cut his hand. Stubbed his toe. Infection. Infection? Ye gods, Hank. He's laid down 3 or 4 wonderful excuses to come home. One of these days we look out the window and there'll be our Pinky. Yeah, the truth is, Hank, he's just about as homesick as a boy can get.
Gosh, let me read it again.
Yes, do. Oh,
gee, he'd feel worse than ever if he knew you were laughing at him.
Not really laughing, Hank. Just a sympathetic, understanding chuckle.
Second assistant cook in a lumber camp. Hank, if your brother ever becomes a great man, he can always say proudly that he started right smack at the bottom.
Uh-oh. Here comes the Sky Ranch One Lung Express again. Hold on to your hat.
Okay, Andy, let me off here.
Swimming pool, everybody out.
Thanks for the ride.
I'm going to take a run up to the stables. Board. See you later, Dad.
Hi, Roberta. Stay there. I'm coming over.
At the rate he's going, I'm afraid Skippy will have that scooter worn out before the week is over.
Oh, he's certainly punishing it, all right.
Sit down. Oh, wait till I get this wet towel out of your way. Here.
Oh. Have a good swim?
Oh, the water's divine, Clifford. Why don't you go put your trunks on and take a dip? Makes you feel wonderful.
Later, maybe. Right now, I've got some things I want to get off my mind.
My goodness. All of a sudden, so serious. What now?
Well, I didn't mean to be abrupt.
Clifford, you couldn't hide what you feel if you wanted to. I can tell when you're beginning to cloud up inside.
It's funny, isn't it? I was right on top of the world earlier this morning.
Do you know what it is?
Partly.
Skippy? Andrew, that is?
Well, that started, I guess.
Started what?
Oh, thinking about myself.
And about me, maybe?
Well, yes.
Clifford, look at me. I want you to understand something. Whenever you feel low and introspective, which is so natural for you to do occasionally while you're recuperating, don't ever let me be any kind of a worry to you.
Oh, you're not a worry, Roberta. You've been tremendous through all this.
Yes, but I have a feeling sometimes you think, gosh, what am I getting myself into with that girl anyway? Could there be something like that in the back of your mind? Just a little, maybe?
Well, you see, I don't quite know how to put it. What I'm trying to say is that it isn't you, really. It's me.
Let's be quite honest with one another, Clifford. Why don't you come right out and tell me what's in your mind? After all, that's the only fair thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well?
Well, when I first saw Skippy this morning, he was kind of acting like something was eating him, and the thing was, I don't know. Silly, I guess.
No, it isn't. Go on. What did Skippy say about me? I'm sure that was it.
Oh, he likes you, really. Really does.
But he's afraid you might want to marry me, is that it?
Yes.
Well, it shouldn't be too big a problem. You haven't committed yourself, and I'm not going to sue you.
Oh, please.
That wasn't very funny, I'm sorry. And Skippy's attitude is perfectly understandable. Here he's finding his father for the first time, and the thought of sharing you now, anyway, is a bit hard on the poor little guy.
Well, maybe, but...
And now you feel mixed up. You don't want to hurt Skippy, and you don't know what to do about me, right?
That's only part of it.
And the rest?
Well, that started me on a whole train of thought. Mostly about what a mess I've made of marriage.
But I thought you'd got that pretty well straightened out, Clifford. That what happened wasn't your fault. Wasn't because of any dereliction or lack of love or devotion on your part.
Well, I've told myself that over and over, but when Skippy mentioned marriage, you'd heard Ben and Hank talking about us. Well, that's what started it.
Yes?
Well, my mind jumped to something that the Reverend MacArthur said in that eulogy to Irene. Hazel has a record of it. She played it for me the other day. I was at her house. She thought it might help me.
Yes, you told me, and it did help you. You said so.
Yes, but one part of it hit me right between the eyes today. It started this sort of, well, this train of thought.
What part are you referring to, Clifford?
Well, it went something like this, that Irene had brought something fine into the world, and it must remain, even though she has departed.
Well, I think that's a lovely thought. That should only give you a sense of peace over her loss.
Yes, but don't you see, Roberta, here's a girl I married and lived with and lost in those missing 11 years. And she's a stranger, a complete blank. This sweet person who married me is gone. Worse than gone, because there isn't even a memory. And Anne is gone. It seems that any girl who has anything to do with me ends up in utter disaster.
You blame yourself for that?
Well, maybe not, but it just seems I must be bad medicine for women.
Oh, Clifford.
Well, all my life, Dad's talked about the sanctity of marriage. That it's a lifelong partnership of love and understanding, and that broken homes and divorces are sinful. I wanted my marriage to be the way he had pictured to me ever since I was a boy. With Anne, I went into it with the feeling it actually was something that heaven had brought about.
Out of it came nothing but desolation. With Irene, I don't know, but it must have been the same. Then I meet you. And again, I begin thinking that I found the answer to this idealistic relation that Dad's talked about.
And now you doubt?
No. No, it's because I don't doubt it. That's what upsets me.
Well, isn't that paradoxical?
No, Roberta. When I see what a gentle, kind person you are, I want to put aside my selfish wishes. I want you to be happy. And that's something that's impossible with me. If anything ever happened to you... Do you understand at all what I'm getting at?
Yes, Clifford.
Oh, doggone it. Now I've got you all upset. You see, there's an example of what I mean. Stick around Cliff Barber long enough and it'll work out some way so everything will be all balled up.
Everything isn't all balled up. You've got to stop letting your mind go in that channel. And as far as my relation to you is concerned, it's... Oh, here comes Skippy, though.
I wish he wouldn't go so fast on that thing.
He doesn't look too pleased at my being here.
Don't you think you've ridden enough for a while?
Okay. Come here a minute, will you, Dad?
Why don't you come over here? I'm talking to Roberta. Hey, fella.
Yeah, Dad?
Didn't you hear me? I said, why don't you come over here?
Okay.
He's anything but enthusiastic.
He'll be all right when the new wears off. Hiya, fella.
You having a lot of fun, Skippy?
Sure.
Oh, want to sit down here by me?
Well, I...
Come on. Do you good to rest a bit here by the pool.
I think I'll go put on my bathing suit and take a swim.
All right.
Don't let any of the kids ride my scooter while I'm gone.
Bye. I'm not getting over too well with your son.
Oh, he's thinking about the scooter.
I don't think so.
Huh?
No, Clifford. He's thinking about Roberta Evans. And not too pleasant thoughts either, I'm afraid.
Just heard Chapter 3, Book 71 of One Man's Family, written, produced, and transcribed under the direction of Carlton E. Morse. Chapter 4, entitled Definite Progress in Family Relations, will come to you next week at this same time. Man's Family comes to you from California. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY in a chapter from One Man's Family. First broadcast on radio on July 18th, 1949. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.